Lucky 13. Today we have Elindriel with us as always, and also a special guest, Vajra. Hey Vajra, how's it going?
Hey, going great. Thanks for inviting me back.
No problem. Just for those paying attention, Aralade and the Aralade family are doing very well after the new edition. So she is taking some time off to, of course, look after that. And so that's why we have Vajra with us here. So today we will be talking about our PAX memories and also EverQuest Next. It came out this week and we're possibly excited about it. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Didn't come out this week.
Okay, the announcement with this was this week.
It had its coming out party, if that's what you mean. I mean, that's something.
It was finger painting.
Yes. It's a sandbox game, and they introduced it with sand art. Isn't that clever, folks? That's so clever.
Am I right?
Yeah, I didn't even get that.
Yeah, no, that was very much a, oh, you made a funny moment, you know.
What I did do is immediately turn off the stream and go do something else, though.
I wish I had.
I was like, oh, this is really pretty, and then it went on for like 20 minutes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, what? That...
so slow. So anyway, Ellie, how are you doing this weekend?
Pretty good.
Good. You look very official with like your pop screen and your glasses, and I feel like you've made us all look smarter.
Oh, awesome. That's not good. Me. I have the right angle so you can see the pop screen, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's very good. How about you, Vajra? How are you doing?
Oh, good. Tired. Ready for another weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Me too. Okay, so let's start with EverQuest Next because it is the hot new news. It was announced finally last week in a big presentation at SOE Live in Las Vegas.
Well, it was revealed. It was revealed.
It was revealed. And there was a lot of stuff they had to talk about, including voxels. Is everyone excited about voxels?
I still don't know what they are.
Yeah. Are voxels just Minecraft blocks?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, there are 3D pixels.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would be excited about them if I actually saw some in-game footage of them being used rather than pre-rendered, pre-recorded video. I don't know. You can do a lot with pre-rendered, you know, in-studio video that I didn't see it. I didn't see any of that in the actual game.
Well, they had some good ideas, including
you
know, the destructible environment made of voxels. They've put in a subterranean layer, and they said they did like 10,000 years of history to figure out where artifacts would be if you dig down. And as well, the AI, which is done by Storybricks, which is supposed to be a more dynamic, you know, they will give orcs sort of a guideline. For example, orcs don't like people, but they do like robbing solo travelers, so they will go where that is most pleasant for their environment. So there are some cool things going on. I'm a little skeptical whether they'll be able to do it. Well, exactly, right?
I don't know. I mean, this, yeah. What was that, Ellie, help me out here. What was the name of that vaporware console from a couple of years ago? Was it the Phantom? Was that the totally ironic name for it?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Oh, God, come on. Give me gaming history. Someone will remember this. I don't know. This feels super vaporware-y at this point. They've made some really, really, really big promises on what they're going to do. A lot of it, I don't even know that is possible with current technology. Unless they've done some really, really, really clever development that they've managed to completely hush up for the last couple of years. I don't know. This feels like a pipe dream. And I want them to succeed more than anyone. Before anyone calls me a hater or, you know, wishing failure on them, I want EverQuest Next to succeed. So bad. So badly. But
why?
I was a hardcore EQ and EQ2 goober. That's what I cut my teeth on in MMOs, and I really loved both of those games, and I really want EverQuest Next to be, you know, the next big thing. And the actual gameplay demo I saw is not... it looked like Guild Wars and WoW mashed up together. It was gruesome. It was not good.
You know, they say that the world is going to heal over time, which is good because obviously everyone's going to blow giant holes and build giant dicks. I mean, let's be honest, that's what they're going to do.
That's what I'd do.
So,
yep.
I mean, but if the world heals over time, that's not really a permanent change to the environment.
No.
Well, it is if they let you build buildings and stuff.
Until someone comes and blows that building up within an hour of your finishing it because they saw it and...
I mean, there's a reason dicks. I don't play Minecraft with other people.
Right. Right.
Right.
Because the opportunities for trolling are so colossal.
Yeah, I mean, you spend hours and hours and hours building your thing, and then some guy's like, hey, I just released a fire monster in there. I hope you don't have any wood.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, someone digs up through your floor, you know, from a spider hatcher, and next time you log in, your house is full of giant spiders. You know, shit like that. So...
yeah, no, exactly. And I think, you know, the whole, they're doing EverQuest Landmark, I think they're calling it, which is the actual building material. So you can build a house in Landmark and then template it and take your template to EverQuest next. So
I still don't get quite how that's going to work.
What's Landmark?
Landmark is the actual building tools with the voxels.
Oh, so you like go build it in a different program and then import it?
I think that is the way they're setting it up. Yeah, I'm a little vague into how EverQuest Next and the Landmark kind of interact with each other.
See, the way I understood it, and again, this is, maybe I'm just misinterpreting this, but I thought it was like more like the Dimensions in Rift, where it's sort of you mark a place in the game world and then can start building there in an instance sort of pocket dimension, and then you can export that from that sort of pocket dimension into the real world.
Okay. Well,
that was,
I mean,
how
that's...
I understood it, but maybe I could...
Yeah. I think that it... I hope that it's actually an in-game sort of experience, because building in another tool and then... I mean, building in a tool, as long as the, like, communication and, like, there's an
you
easy way to swap between what you're doing and, yeah, and playing with other people, then yeah, that would work out. Otherwise, that's going to be... I don't know. I mean, it, you know, it's a lot like, I want to say how I expect the Foundry is in that game that none of us liked. Yeah. you know, the tool is like, you go off and build your thing and everything's great and hooray, you built a tool. But that whole time you're sort of like off in your own little world doing that and not playing the game with other people. Hopefully that changes or whatever. I mean, as long as you can swap between, if it's like Dimensions in Rift, like you can go work on your thing and still chat with people and then just pop out, play for a while, and then pop back in when you're ready. That'd be cool.
Yeah. And I'm kind of hoping that's what happens, but I don't know. They didn't really make it very clear at this point, so who knows?
Well, they may or may not know, honestly.
Yeah, there's a lot still up in the air. I'd like to hear more about the housing, because housing in EverQuest 2 is amazing, so I'd like to know how much of that is going to EverQuest next. And I'd like to hear more about crafting.
The way they described crafting, at least, I mean, they were really only talking about it in terms of weaponsmithing in the reveal, if I remember correctly. The theory is that every class will build sort of add-ons for armor and weapons of different types, and different gear slots that will visually as well as functionally modify your items. So, like, you can add a different handguard onto a sword that'll give it different abilities or modify different skills, rather. So everyone will be sort of interconnected. So, you know, if I'm getting this right, a weaponsmith could, like, make the sword, and then another craftsman could make, you know, adornments for it.
So, like, enchanting... And the one with gems.
Artificing?
In Warcraft, the one with gems.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
jewel,
right,
crafting.
Yeah.
Jewel crafting. Jewel crafting. Yeah. Hopefully hopefully it's more involved than that, because that system is kind of...
Well, I mean, as long as they get the general look and feel of the EQ2 crafting system, I'm happy. I liked that a lot.
I really like the EverQuest 2 crafting. It's got, like, a nice little mini game, and I hope they bring that spirit over. I can't see... How they wouldn't. I mean, housing and crafting are like the pillars of EverQuest 2, so I'd be really surprised if they did a shoddy job of that with EverQuest Next.
Well, I don't know, they might do a shoddy job. They might just not focus on that as much as some of their crazy pants new stuff, like, you know, story bricks and voxel blocks and whatever.
Yeah, but they might. If it's already fun for people, they may or may not need to change it too much, right? I mean, like, that might be the sort of thing that they sort of feel like they know how to do, so they spend more of their time with new stuff.
Well, as long as they don't dick around with the old system too much, that's cool. But if they just throw something in half-baked and, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I have hopes.
Yeah, I mean,
fingers
it sounds
crossed.
Like they grabbed some of those technologies from indie games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the AI is coming from Storybricks, and the voxel engine itself is coming from this guy who just decided to write a voxel engine, so that's pretty cool.
God bless the nerd community of the world, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
there are people sitting around doing this stuff.
I mean, this is also one of the first times, well, maybe not. It's one of the, like, public times, one of the first public times that I can recall, like, a AAA title just hiring people out. I'm sure it happens all the time. You know, licensing indie games. I know lots of indie developers like go and then, you know, cut their teeth on indie games and then go work at studios or bring over technology. But I don't know, maybe it's just a good thing with all of the indie development that's going on right now. You know, the stuff that's good gets incorporated into the stuff that has higher production values too, which is cool.
Well, when they're more kind of utility style things like the story bricks. Yeah, I definitely see that as the kind of the that's almost the way it's supposed to work, I think, is, you know, they create these utilities and the bigger developers say, hey, that would work amazingly for Project X, and then, you know, either I think in this case I get the impression that did Sony just like hire the guy or just buy the rights to the software, or are they just licensing it?
I don't know.
Because I mean, if they're just sort of scooping up smart people with good ideas, that's the heart of good business.
My understanding is that Storybricks is still its own unique organization. They're just lending their technology to everyone.
Yeah, that's like licensing. That's reasonable. One of the MUDs I first cut my multiplayer gaming on, they actually did the same thing for the Star Wars Old Republic story decision engine is all based out of work that they did. They were like gonna build a MMO, and eventually I think it became Vaporware, but they sold their story building engine to several people, including Star Wars, which is pretty cool. So I mean, it's not new to like build tools and send them. It's just
yeah.
Well, I think it's really cool that the EverQuest people, Sony, are willing to go outside of their company to look for the technology to do what they want to do. I think that actually bodes well for the game being different from most of it, because every MMO says it's going to be different. I mean, Guild Wars 2 was like, we're totally different,
yeah,
and they're
well,
not.
But
So I think that actually bringing in, you know, indies and people who are burning the midnight oil, you know, trying to make these technologies, that is really going to make
a
difference.
Yeah, well, smart people with good ideas. That's, you know, the core of the industry. So
yeah, exactly. One of the things they said about EverQuest Next is that there will be no Holy Trinity. And the Storybricks guys have been saying, no, you know, wait till you see the AI. Wait till you see the AI. This is going to work out. But I am pretty skeptical about no Holy
Trinity. Wait, which
are
the Holy Trinity? Because Georgeson kept going on about his Holy Grails of
now,
MMOs.
No, Holy Trinity is tank DPS healer.
Okay. I just wasn't sure what you were talking about, because Georgeson had like his three or four holy grails that were required to make a good MMO that he's determined to get in. And I wish I had my notes in front of me, because I wrote down what they were, and I was a little curious about the things he decided to emphasize. I'm trying to remember what they were. Damn, I've completely lost it now.
But, I mean, I love playing a healer, so they're going to have to be really convincing to tell me why I should care about not playing a healer.
Well, I got the impression that it's more like that you're still going to be like able to play a healer, it's just you're not going to require, it's not going to require the Holy Trinity to.
Right, you don't need a dedicated healer, a dedicated tank, and 3 DPS in a 5-man party. And, like, as soon as that goes away, thank God, my life is way better.
It's true. The days we have to.
Yeah, you know, you're wrong. You're shaking your head. I can see you now. You can't just shake your head.
Busted. Oh, this is brilliant.
I don't like this system at all.
But no, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess part of it is different philosophies. I have played healers, I've played tanks a lot, and I have played lots and lots of hybrids. And I just don't want to require certain people to play certain roles in order for me to do the content, you know, to participate in the content. Like, if I have 3 friends and we all want to play, like, you know, hunters or whatever, if we all want to play like similar-ish characters because that's what's fun and interesting for us, then we should be able to. And, you know, it shouldn't require us to either go find somebody else to add to our group, or for one of us or two of us in this case to make the specific compromise to play some role that we're not interested in. And I think that, you know, especially when I started out, and wow, that was a huge issue, is like, I could never figure out if, you know, my group of friends was going to have enough whatevers to play the game together. And so then somebody always re-rolled, and it was probably me because I'm that guy anyway. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it was, you know, frustrating. And every time I go to an MMO, I want to play the class that I want to play and not worry about whether I'm going to be able to participate or not.
My only concern is whether they can actually make boss fights or fights in general that are challenging. I mean, because there's no Trinity in Guild Wars 2. But the problem I hear, and I haven't played it myself, but is that everything is just like, it's like a Zergy chaos, you know, graveyard Zerg, because there's no Trinity, so everybody just sort of throws whatever they got at them until they die. And I'm hoping if they can come up with a way to do strategic fights without that, then I'm on board. But I haven't seen that happen yet.
Well, yeah, I that's kind of what I'm afraid is going to happen, though, is that we're going to end up with something that looks a lot like Guild Wars 2. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, at this point, it's obviously a little early to be making predictions, but at this point, that's kind of my prediction, is what we're going to see is a Guild Wars-like hodgepodge of, different styles of run up to the boss and mash a key at it until you're dead. Mm-hmm. And that people will be wearing different armor and will have different animations and particle effects, but it will all essentially be run up to the boss and mash too.
Have you tanked in WoW in the last 3 or 4 years?
I? God, no. Jeez, ugh.
So, at some what point, they... Jesus. Tanking, for several expansions, and I can't really speak to the latest one. I can't speak to Pandaria, but certainly through Lich King and through Cataclysm, tanking was essentially just a DPS rotation. And that bored the shit out of me. Mm. Like, there's a reason I stopped tanking and started DPSing, is because at least if I was going to do everything right, I was going to be on top of the DPS meters and everybody was going to know how good I was. You know, like, before that, before that, you know, I felt like I could make a difference, and to some extent I think the last time I really felt that way was in Alduar, specifically Thorim. Thorim, he's the lightning guy, right? With, like, the arena, and he's, like, throwing lightning bolts at you. Yeah, and that one, like, it made a big difference to my group's success, whether I could actually pick up the guys, and, you know, that there were certain mobs that had to be grabbed immediately and would start killing everybody, and the positioning was tight, and, like, you know, doing that well for my group, like, helped us out tremendously. And when somebody else was tanking and it wasn't me, that whole arena went to shit. And, you know, that's not necessarily me specifically, but, like, speaking about a competent tank versus just somebody who runs in and mashes buttons. And so, I mean, you know, I guess that there is room to build tanking classes or whatever. You know, and I know that healing is a different beast altogether, but certainly there's room to differentiate some of that stuff. I don't know. I guess I want to be able to play the class I want and not, like, have to worry about whether somebody else can do that job or not, you know, because if there's a fight where there's a bunch of stuff going on and there's a part of it where somebody needs to pull a guy to a specific location and stick him there or run him around in circles, I can do that. And I can do that no matter what class I'm playing, if I'm given the tools. And well, somebody else can do the same thing.
In theory, that's going to be, I mean, I don't know. Their class system, it sounds just sort of insane. So I imagine it'll really come down to everyone having all of the tools possible. Just, you might have slightly different stylistic flourishes on how they look, but everyone should, in theory, have every ability. Because, I mean, did you hear about did you listen to how they're going to set up the classes? How there's only like 4 or 6 base classes, but each of those base classes has like 30 something
mm-hmm.
offshoot classes that grow off them, and you can just sort of mix and match things from all of the ones you've unlocked to make your dream class. kind of like Rift on steroids. So, I mean, really, there's only so many things you can do in a game, in an MMO. You can really only have so many ways of shoot the mans, stab the mans, heal your friends, or get hit in the face. there's really only so many ways you can do that. So when you figure every class has got like 24 different, 32, whatever ridiculous number of extra classes they've got to work from, everyone's going to have every ability. You'll just, you know, one guy will be doing it by shooting lightning out of his ass, the other guy will be shooting, you know, black fire out of his hands or something. It'll be the same thing, they'll just look different. So really, I expect everyone will have every tool. It'll just come down to people's sort of, I don't know, stylistic taste.
Well, that's legit.
Yeah, and I'm sure that some people will. I mean, optimization fatigue is an issue in our gaming hobby, right? Like, we all fight over, you know, 200 DPS out of 10,000. I mean, maybe less so now than we did a couple years ago when we were all heavily invested in raiding, but...
I was going to say something, but I changed my mind there. I think that that was also partially because WoW let us too far behind the curtain. They let us see too much of the underlying numbers, and as a result, I mean, that's the thing about nerds is if you give us a tunable situation, we will tune that son of a bitch within an inch of its life. Nerds are fiddlers. They need to fiddle with things to optimize them. So because WoW gave us such a piercing look behind the veil into how everything worked, you know, I think people took it that much further, and I think newer games that have come out since have probably realized that and kind of reeled that in a little bit to not let us...
I mean, have they? Rift has a combat log. Rift doesn't... Rift has a combat log that people have quickly built tools to analyze completely.
Yeah, but does Guild Wars do that? Are we going to see...
No.
Yeah. I wonder if that's kind of going to be more of the way of the future, is just less information given to the players.
Go back to where we used to be when we didn't know, you know, how much damage jumping on the guy's head did.
I was happier then.
Yeah, me too. No, I think... You know,
speaking for myself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a lot happier... you know, in Warcraft right now as a level 24 hunter or paladin or whatever I am. I have two characters now.
Here we go again.
No, but so, like, I'm a lot happier just, like, pressing the buttons that seem like they're the right buttons rather than actively knowing that it's the right button, you know? I mean,
right.
It just makes me, it's a lot more freeing for me to not really care. And that's part of the problem that I have when I go back to Rift right now, is that in order to get a playable character, I have to start from the beginning. If you start from the beginning, it's okay. If you want to build your own spec, you just sort of pick the things that sound good or one of the suggested paths. Everything else is like, man, like, there's a lot of buttons to configure. And then, I mean, there's a lot of choices to make up front with talents. And then there's a lot of buttons that come out of those talents, and then you have to like spend tons and tons of time trying to optimize or trying to figure out what's intended, and then, you know, let alone the edge cases where like the things that are intended are misleading.
Well, that's always been, I think, Rift's one weak spot, is that they kind of throw you into the deep end information wise with the classes very, very quickly and just kind of leave you to figure out how to swim on your own. You know, I know a number of people who have not made it through their introductory period with Rift just because the talent trees terrified them so very much.
Yeah, I actually really liked them once I got into them. It's just if you are, it does not make for a casual experience. It does not make for a good casual experience.
There's a very high learning curve to get past the leveling part. Once you've gotten through the leveling, you're pretty much expected to, by that point, know how to build your own class, essentially. Actually, when you think about it, Rift is almost a very good example of what I was talking about the kind of everyone being able to do everything just with different sort of particle effects on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
they still haven't gotten to the point where everyone can do every single thing, but...
Next expansion, they've already said they're going to do that.
Yeah, well, next expansion, whenever 3.0 happens, it's, you know, I think that's not going to be for at least a year. but
well, yeah, I'm not nearly up to date enough. I'll ask them when we get to PAX.
Yeah, it'll be.
They're like, hey guys.
Yeah, I'm sure we're not going to get a lot of when's 3.0 questions. That's
nobody
be...
will think to ask that question.
Yeah, no, that's bottom of my list.
Just have to, you know, track down Scott Hartzman and corner him at the Rift party and see how it goes.
I actually want to make a sign with, like, give him, like, a big, curly black head of hair and a big handlebar mustache, make a sign that says, "Welcome back, Scotter," and hold that up during the party. I'm really tempted. I want to see if I can get a reaction. But Scott Hartzman, if you hear this, here to hear first. Be prepared.
It will be nice to see front him row. At PAX again.
Yeah, no, it'll be good. I was worried we wouldn't get some compromising photos of him posing with a booth babe.
I wished him happy birthday last year.
You did. I remember that.
Yeah. Speaking of PAX, segue.
See how I led you right into that transition?
Yeah.
Nice. Smooth, man. Smooth. Very smooth.
So, PAX is coming up in 2 weeks, and all three of us are going. And more importantly, all three of us have been to multiple previous PAXes, so I thought we could talk about some of our old experiences.
How many PAXes have you been to?
This will be my fourth? Fifth?
This would be the fourth, I think.
Yeah, it's been a lot.
What was your first year? Do you remember?
5 years
ago?
I missed one.
The first PAX I went to, it was so unattended that I walked in on a Sunday because someone's like, you should go to this PAX thing, it's cool. And I just walked in and bought a pass on Sunday. I'm like, you know, I don't need a pass for today, whatever. Now, of course, the passes sell out in like 12 minutes, so.
I think it was 8.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I also have been to... I think 6, maybe? I don't know. I think 2008 was my first year, but I also went to a PAX East.
That's right, yeah. What did you find? Was there any difference between PAX West and PAX East in your mind?
I think I went... sense.
It was cold. It was in the middle of the winter. that was actually kind of weird. Like, you know, so the convention hall was across the street from, I think, from either our hotel or maybe from the place with all the food. I can't really remember. I just remember there was like cold wind and I was in shorts and a t-shirt because the PAX, like the convention hall is still hot. And it was like, I mean, I grew up in Chicago, so I know what it's like in the winter. But, you know, running across the street in shorts and a t-shirt when it's really cold out because I didn't want to carry my jacket around all day. That was pretty awesome. Nice. I think I went to the first PAX East and it was really, it was way, the hall was way too small for PAX, so it felt really crowded. I've heard that they've done a lot better, and I haven't been back yet. One of these years I'll get back.
So, Vajra, what stands out to you from, like, previous PAXes? Have you seen any celebrities?
Celebrities at PAX? Well, I guess that depends on what tier of celebrity we're talking about. I mean,
and also
I always wave to Total Biscuit. He never waves back though.
All right,
he never
that
waves
counts,
back.
That counts.
What does seeing mean?
Yeah, really. It's. I once glimpsed Felicia Day from across a crowded room.
Yeah, did I've been really? To concerts where like all those guys show up.
Yeah.
What? That's cool. That counts.
Not really.
Not really.
I saw Total
that's
Biscuit.
Like,
and
that's
I,
like saying I went to the movies and oh my god, I saw Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right, fair enough. Well, I saw Total Biscuit and yeah. That's it for my celebrities.
Honestly, you know, I don't really go to PAX for the celebrities, but then I don't know how many celebrities, quote unquote, there really are. Although I will tell a funny story about kind of a celebrity related to PAX was, the last year I went to BlizzCon, MC Frontalot inexplicably had been hired by Blizzard to basically do like sets between the big main stage, like, you know, reveals that they were doing. So he was kind of like, he was on there, like their main stage, but in between the big presentations, and he was being completely ignored. And at PAX, he's a bald, tiny god. And it was really weird to see an equally sized crowd completely ignoring him, just shuffling by, ignoring him.
No, that's
during
true.
His
I recall
set.
That. Yeah, yeah.
That was very weird.
So what different crowd. I'm going to miss this year is the BioShock Infinite booth, because I feel it's like my old PAX friend.
The perennial BioShock Infinite booth.
Wait, I don't even remember. What was the BioShock Infinite booth?
Oh, it's been there for like the last 3 years, and it's gotten like smaller and smaller and weirder as the years go by, to the point where I actually thought the game would never come out.
Wasn't it the first year they actually had like the giant songbird model bursting out of like the background with the girl dressed as Elizabeth like clutching his hand? You could have your picture taken with her. And then next year,
I miss that?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. It was great. Then the next year, they just had Elizabeth. And the year after that, they didn't have Elizabeth or Songbird. They just had a poster. In fact, I think it was a hand-drawn poster. I think it was actually done in pencil.
Oh, my goodness.
No, it was good. I got reminded of this story this weekend, actually. It was good. I think the last year of the BioShock Infinite booth, they had stopped even putting trailers or anything there. They just had some framed pieces of storyboard art, which is about that was all they showed you. You waited in line for an hour to look at a half dozen pieces of storyboard art and a photo of a guy who had play tested the beta.
Maybe that's why I didn't know much about it. I haven't waited in a line. Mm-hmm. I haven't waited in a long line like that at PAX for a while. But I waited for Borderlands 2. Two years ago, when they were like giving out shirts and doing like an early in-depth trailer demo thing,
right?
That was cool.
I actually really regretted not going to their panel a couple of years ago. That it was that same year, and they did a panel on Sunday, just kind of like a ask Gearbox anything type thing. And a coworker of mine, his younger brother went, and obviously almost no one went because it was Sunday afternoon, the last day of PAX. No one cared. Apparently the hall was like half full at best. And at the door, there were just people handing out, postcards. So, you're going to be able to redeem this for some swag. And apparently near the end of the Q&A, whoever's leading it got up and pulled a straight-up Oprah Winfrey on the crowd and said, "Okay, guys, remember those cards you all got? Those are all good for a free copy of Borderlands 2.
Yeah, my friend got that.
I remember, hearing this the next day going, "Son of a bitch, I went for, a burger when that happened. I could have had Borderlands 2 instead of a cheeseburger."
Yeah, so I waited in line for the booth, and I got a sweet Borderlands t-shirt. Uh-huh. And my friend missed out on the t-shirt, but then went to the, went to the thing and got a copy of the game, and he was all bragging about the copy of the game. And I was like, "Yeah, but I can get a copy of the game. You can't get a t-shirt." So I think I made the right choice there. I don't know. Most of my best PAX stories are not related at all to anything that actually happened, during the convention. Like, I really enjoy my time going. I like going to panels. I like going, I like seeing games and stuff. Although, honestly, a lot of the, booths are a lot less interesting to me, I find, these days.
It's all hype. You never really find anything out about the game.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of the first years I went, I spent a bunch of time playing one of the WWE games. I mean, I did, because they just had, rows of games, and you could, walk up and play them for a while. And, playing the games, that was fun, right? That was my favorite part about going there, was, a giant, free-play arcade of games that hadn't been released yet. So it felt like I got to interact with the games more rather than just watch the trailer again. And, a lot of games, especially the big ones, either the lion's, an hour or more long, and I'm just, not really willing to sit in that, stand in that. Or they're showing off demos, or the game's going to come out in 2 months, and why do I want to wait for 2 hours to get to play the game for 15 minutes? It's going to come out in 2 months that I'm going to buy anyway, because most of the games that I'm going to stand, that I'd be willing to stand in line for, I already am probably going to buy unless I play it and it's terrible.
Exactly. And I don't know. I mean, honestly, for me, a big part of it was that the big booths, you are a lot less likely to have any of the actual development team there, and I really like being able to talk to the people who, were the ones who actually made the game, not their hired, booth biscuits or their PR flax, but the actual development team. And you always get to talk to them in the indie alley and whatnot.
That's true. I waited in line for an hour and a half to play Star Wars on Star Wars The Old Republic and get a shirt.
I remember that. I played like three very good games in the time it took you to get through that line, and you came out of it making that exact face for like the next hour. That was
it's
the only face you made.
The
it was
next
good.
Big thing. I gotta try it now, and then I'm like, oh.
Do you remember when like Privateer Press was like throwing out shirts from their pirate ship? Like, where's all that cool swag? All that swag is sort of like gone away now. Now you have to like sit in line for everything, like.
I haven't had a shirt shot at me with a t-shirt cannon in years. It's true.
I just feel like it was a lot more sort of... I mean, now it's gotten big enough to the point where, like, I don't know. It just feels a lot more...
institutionalized?
Yeah, exactly.
It does.
Exactly.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I stood and talked to the Torchlight developers before Torchlight 1 came out, when nobody knew about Torchlight, for probably 45 minutes. And the guys were just like... geeking out and like breaking the developer console out and like doing all sorts of stuff and just be like, yeah, this thing's awesome. Remember, like, you know, you could do all this thing. Look at this really cool thing we implemented. It was like the weekend and we were like, oh, this is pretty sweet. They're going to do this. And like, you know, that sort of enthusiasm, like you said, I mean, like talking to, you know, the marketing reps is a lot less interesting to me. And I shouldn't say that if I ever want to actually have a conversation with a marketing rep, but, you know, the interesting
or
things...
Or marketing reps you could do better.
Well, just yeah. I mean, that's very... right. Yeah, I just want to... Like, the interaction with developers and stuff, that's pretty cool. Last year, I talked to the guys who were making Forge during the end of their Kickstarter, their unsuccessful Kickstarter that I backed. Although they gave me... I mean, I still have a copy of the game. I don't think I've actually started it, but I have a copy.
Forge.
But it was cool. I mean, it was promising. I talked to the guys, like, talking to the developers was fun. That is the most interesting part of going to PAX from a industry perspective. The rest of it is, like, I literally have friends that I've met at PAX and only see and talk to at PAX. And so I very much want to go every year just so I can see those people. That's my favorite part by far.
I'm really looking forward to hitting the indies this year. There's a lot of really cool indie games, and I know from last year, you know, they're always really, it's the same sort of thing. They're always really eager to talk to people and talk about their game and show it off, and it's very grassroots, so I'm looking forward to that.
That is a good hipster answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'll be interested to see how the intersection this is with the Steam Greenlight program. They've gotten a lot. That's, you know, from this really great new access point for independent games. I'm wondering how many of those developers make a physical showing at events like PAX as well. There's just been this huge kind of explosion of indie games being made available on, you know, digital fronts. I'm just kind of hoping they don't stop doing, you know, the physical meet and greet type stuff as well.
Yeah, a bunch of those were there last year at PAX. They're sort of
were there.
Yeah,
that's so good. Thank goodness.
There was I'm trying to remember exactly where it was, but it was, you know, off sort of towards one of the wings, you know, like off a little bit
in right an access off. Hallway.
It wasn't like the upstairs. I felt like there was that upstairs area, in like the other building almost. I don't know. There was a. On, like, the top floor, there was, like, a room that was, like, all indies and stuff. But I felt like that was sort of, like, the, you know, go here and be forgot about. The Minecraft guys are up there, I think.
Yeah, that's where the Mojang booth was. Yeah, that I liked that place. It was, like, the secret room. You know, you had to, like, find the hidden switch behind the filing cabinet and fight a leopard to get to the escalator that led up.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah, so that was cool. But the part where I actually had the most interaction with people was on the main floor. It was just sort of, like, in the back, you know, and there was a whole ring of booths. Smite was nearby.
Smite, that was good.
So, like, but back behind that, I played. They were showing Octodad, which is like a. I don't know if you guys have played it. I actually haven't, but a lot of people. That was one of the ones that was early Greenlight. And it was just a bunch of like little indie games that were pretty fun to play. All just there was Big Ring. I assume they'll be here again. Be there again.
Hopefully.
Not here. I'm not in PAX right now.
Right.
Well, we will be live from PAX in 2 weeks, doing a live broadcast of the show, talk about what we see on the show floor. So until then, Ellie, what else have you been playing this week?
Dungeon something. What's it called?
Uh-huh.
dungeon thing?
Dungeon robber. Dungeon robber.
So, I like my name better.
Have you guys heard of Dungeon Robber? I know you guys have because I've told you about it.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I totally have. So Dungeon Robber is... Okay. It's sort of the offshoot of a Kickstarter project, I think, to make random dungeons for like D&D pen and paper games. And the guy took all of the first edition... Apparently in one of the first edition books, probably the Dungeon Master Guide, there's like some big chart where you can create a random on-the-fly dungeon crawl instance. And he, you know, just by rolling, and then you like, it tells you what's in the room and it tells you how many exits and everything. And, so he built into a Flash game the entirety of that. He was, you know, part of his Kickstarter was like a huge infographic wall chart, you know, with illustrations on this dungeon. And he basically built a little roguelike into Flash, and, you know, it's pretty fun. It's kind of repetitive, but it's fun.
Cool.
I also played some WoW. We talked about that. We've been doing the... Yeah, Lior, you played WoW too. You can't even say no.
I did.
Shaking my head at both of you. Standing in judgment.
Well, we've started up a group to run instances every week or so. And level up is kind of a team, although we're already getting separated by East Coast and West Coast. So we'll see how much longer it lasts. But we've run 2 weeks in a row. The group is up to Gnomeregan this week, I think. And it's kind of fun to like play with people again. That's the most fun about it. It's like, I kind of wish it wasn't WoW sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff has changed, but it's still WoW. The only good thing is that we're playing on the Horde, which is where I've always, always, always wanted to play and never have been able to.
That is definitely a good part.
I've never found a group on the Horde, and this is the first consistent group on the Horde. So, that's good.
Cool. Vajra, what have you been playing lately?
Fair bit of Rift, and I'm still, actually, despite having beaten the game, I'm going back and clearing up all the side content and Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, do you like that one?
Yes. Yes, I do. If you haven't played it, play it.
It's sitting downloaded, but I feel like I have to get through Saints Row the Third first.
You probably should, because the ending of Saints Row is completely worth the time and effort. And, Saints Row is probably the better game of the two overall, but Sleeping Dogs was a lot better than I expected it to be. The combat and really the hand-to-hand combat and the driving are way better than this game probably should have had. Or maybe the rest of the game just sort of lagged behind that, I don't know. But the story is amazing. It feels very much like playing the lead in a Johnny To triad drama. It's sort of like if... What was the name of that John Woo video game that was basically a hard-boiled movie? Do you remember what that was called?
No,
damn. A couple of years ago. I think it had an appropriate John Woo-ish name. But basically, it was intended to be sort of like playing a Chow Yun-Fat action movie as a video game. This was very much a triad drama as a game. It was really good.
Stranglehold? Was it called
Stranglehold? Thank you. There you go.
Oh, man. I just looked it up, and the cover has, you know, a guy leaping backwards with crossed arms shooting two pistols while bullets are flying. So that's basically every John Woo movie ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
In Sleeping Dogs, you can dive in slow motion, mind you, in slow motion, out of a moving car, pull a gun out, and shoot your own out-of-control empty car in the gas tank and blow it up and use it as a flying, burning missile at people. I have done this on multiple occasions.
I want to play. That sounds like the stuff I did in Just Cause.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Speaking of Just Cause, I guess because I own Just Cause, too, I started Sleeping Dogs with a Rico costume.
Oh,
complete
nice.
With the grappling hook thing and the leather vest and kind of like just the whole leather daddy outfit he's got.
That's awesome.
Which is really weird looking. It's a little odd looking on Wei Shen, your character in Sleeping Dogs, running around Hong Kong dressed like, I don't know, some sort of Indiana Jones leather daddy. It's a little weird.
Well, I love Just Cause too, so I hope they make a third one.
Oh, they will. They will. That I think that's actually already in development, but that was too good a formula to not make more. It's just such dumb, easy fun. Kind of like me.
Well, I finished Saints Row 3 in the last couple of weeks.
Boy, did you.
With Vajra, preparing to play Saints Row 4 when it's out on August 20th. The inauguration station, which is what they're calling their character creator, is out right now for free, so you can create your president, which is pretty cool. So I've got that, and just basically Rift and WoW.
That's right. Can't get away from that.
I know, but it's the people. Like, 15 of our guildies show up, and I have to be there.
I know, right? It's exactly it.
I think we all feel that way, which is kind of weird. Why are we in WoW? I don't know.
To be fair, I was playing WoW before, again.
You were.
And I'm still sort of slowly leveling up another person, just because it is kind of fun to play a game that I know pretty well. But is a little bit different than the last time I played. Mm-hmm. But if these people had chosen to go play, you know, I don't know, if everybody had been like, let's like figure out how to play Guild Wars 2 or some other game that I hadn't played already, I probably would be even happier.
Yeah, for sure. But that's about it. And I'm looking forward to PAX in a couple weeks. So we will be back in roughly 2 weeks. We have to set an exact time and day, so watch our Twitter. We do have a Twitter. It's at @catcontext.
That's 3 weeks, by the way, PAX.
3 weeks?
Details. Whatever.
Look, I don't know, man.
Two to three weeks. Between two and maybe we'll be back in 2 weeks and 3 weeks.
That's right. Who can say?
I might be the champion of Grand Prix Oakland by then. The magic.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be the magic champion.
Yeah. I'm not, but I'm going to try.
No, hey, trying is half the battle. Well, that's cool. And Vajra and I will be doing our Saints Row 4 Let's Play starting probably August 21st, so keep an eye on the YouTubes for that.
Why are you waiting a day?
Sorry?
Why are you waiting a day?
I was giving us a day of grace period, but fine. August 20th, fine. We will be there, and we will be saving the world from aliens. As our awesome kick-ass presidents. You can check out the podcast, Cat Context Podcast, leorblog.com. And yeah, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on all those places, so check us out. That's about it. You guys have any closing remarks?
Not at this point. I'll have more to say once we get a little closer to PAX, I imagine. I'll have a lot more obscenities to shout.
Yeah, awesome.
To be continued.
If you're listening, congratulations. Yay.
Good job, Arrow.
And come back.
Yes. We don't want to have to talk to Vajra anymore.
I know.
Like a bad penny.
Vajra,
just keep turning
you
out.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
And Ellie, thank you for coming on.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, that's it. Thanks for listening, folks. We will be back at some undetermined period of time to talk more about video games. Bye!
Bye.
I have stopped the broadcast.
I have not stopped my recording, though.